Hello and welcome to Tax Invoice, the ATO's official podcast. Here at the ATO, we want tax and super to be as easy to understand as possible. So we've invited industry experts to sit down with ATO's senior leaders and ask them the questions. We hope you enjoy this episode of Tax Invoice.
Hi, my name's Craig Latham. I'm the Deputy in the Office of the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman, also known as the ASBFEO, A-S-B-F-E-O. If you Google that, we're the only thing you're going to get. Joining me today is Matthew Uminer. Matt is the Assistant Commissioner in the Small Business Experience at the ATO. And we're here to talk all things tax and small business. So welcome, Matt.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
Pretty well. I'm still wondering why your area is named after a band, the Small Business Experience, but...
Well, I'd love to know myself. I think maybe because we're hip, we're rocking. No, but the reference to experience is because my job and the people that work with me is to try and champion and be the voice of small business in back into the ATO. So we want to sort of represent small business in that way.
So why, Matt, is small business important to you?
Small business is important to the ATO because there's 3.9 million small businesses in Australia. I know there's different numbers across the different agencies, but from a tax perspective, we say there's 3.9 million small businesses that we're trying to look after through the Small Business Experience. These businesses contribute over $380 billion to the Australian economy each year, and they employ over 3 million people. So there's a huge impact.
So what do small businesses look like?
The ATO takes a very different definition to small business to other government agencies. So for us, it's entities with turnover less than $10 million. So unlike other agencies, we don't have a reference to number of employees, value of your assets, for example. We just look at your turnover.
And interestingly, our office actually has up to 100 employees as being small business. So the ombudsman's scope here is quite broad. What can small businesses do to get ready for their tax?
So there's a number of things. We know that the majority of small businesses try to do the right thing when trying to comply with their tax and superannuation obligations. And we know that when they sort of get it wrong, it's for three basic areas. So they make inadvertent errors or just honest mistakes. There's the complexity of the law, so even through their best endeavours, they just get it wrong. And then there are some who deal in the black economy who consciously try and do things wrong. So for those who are trying to do the right thing, the mistakes are around omission of income and overclaiming deductions. So the obvious things to do to help overcome those types of errors is to have really good records. And so you've got to find a mechanism that works for the individual business, but having good record keeping is a good start to help you get it right.
So there's some words there, good record keeping. What does record keeping actually look like and what makes it good?
Okay, so again, it's what works for the individual small business, but some things that help are having electronic records. So if you are an individual or you're a sole trader, the ATO's got an app, and the My Deductions function within the ATO app is a great way to help keep records electronically, and you can then transmit those records to your accountant, or you can upload it into the MyTax function, and then it will import into your tax return so that it effectively pre-fills for you.
So what sorts of records are you thinking of here?
Obviously, the first and foremost one would be receipts. So if you've got invoices, receipts from things that you've purchased throughout the year, that's some of the kinds of records. But otherwise, bank statements and any other evidence that you've got to evidence the fact that you've made a purchase or you've derived some income.
And so that's a responsibility then of people claiming deductions to keep records. Are there other things that you're doing as well to help in this regard?
So the app is the primary thing that the ATO's got by way of an overt support mechanism. But, you know, there are a number of software providers who provide other things that can help you with your record keeping. And it just really depends on the way you run your business and the number of transactions you've got. So, you know, there are still people who still use the proverbial shoebox, and obviously then they take their invoices in and tally it up either themselves or take it into their accountant.
And I know accountants just love the shoebox, so it's something that I'm presuming.
I'd actually like to see the shoebox one day.
I think the shoebox is real. So this is something I would presume both the ATO and accountants would be encouraging people not to hold a shoebox.
Absolutely. It's just people that are using paper-based invoices, etc. It's often the transposition of the tallying up your invoices and putting it onto the tax returns, things like that, where you see those common mistakes and errors. And so obviously if it's all done electronically, we can take that error rate out of the system.
So the app, I understand, like you can use, it sits on your phone.
Yes, and you've got it already downloaded.
And, I have it downloaded, but you have it on your phone, yep. And you can take pictures of your app rather than letting them yellow on the front of your car.
Exactly, that's the real benefit of the app, is that your invoices don't fade, so that when you do dig them out of the shoebox, they're not sort of, I've got a blank piece of paper here. So yeah, I've got it on my phone, and when I make some deductible donations, you get an invoice and you just take a photo of it, and then you can just put in some details to help you come tax time.
So is this a way that the ATO is spying on you here as well? So
no, it's not spying, because it does sit on your phone. So we don't have access to the record until you upload it. And indeed, you only upload the numbers, as opposed to it's not giving us necessarily all the detail. So if I've made a $50 donation, you upload the 50, not to which charity you've donated and on what date exactly.
Right, and it's your choice as to whether it uploads. So you can just give it to your accountant and have your accountant deal with it.
And so that's a function, being able to email that across to your accountant. Just one other thing, Craig, which you've reminded me of, is it is saved on the phone or on your iCloud, depending on the way in which your smartphone works. So it is important to back it up, because obviously if you have a problem with your phone or lose your phone...
Drop your phone.
Yeah. So just want to make sure that people don't put all their eggs in one basket.
That's the beauty of things electronic. You can do multiple versions of
it.
So we've spoken a little bit about deductions and keeping receipts. So what sorts of deductions are available for small business?
So if you're running a small business, the vast majority of things you would incur in running that business are deductible. So depending on what kind of industry you're in, any inputs that you're doing, if you're a manufacturer, any raw materials that you're purchasing to manufacture things would be deductible. Cost of electricity, office, renting your office or your factory, there'd be things like obviously cost of labour. If you bring in staff, those kind of costs.
So these things sort of sound like the normal costs of running your business.
Yes.
It's those sorts of things that are potentially deductible. So what sorts of things would not be deductible?
Things that are really personal in nature and not related to the running of your business. And so often we do see, again, in that common error field, where people make some purchases for things that are used for the business but also for personal use, and then they don't apportion the expenditure across for personal and business use. It might be a good point at this time to just mention that we've got three golden rules for deductions. And so the three rules are: the money must be spent on your business and not a private expense. If it is purchased for a mix of business and private use, then you've got to apportion that expenditure across the personal and business. And finally, you must have the records to prove it. Some obvious examples of mixed use is sort of if you've got a vehicle and it's a business vehicle, but then sometimes you use it for personal use. Internet, for example, if you are running your business through electronic means, you know, sometimes you'll be using the internet for personal use as well, and so there's an expectation that you apportion that expense across your personal and business use.
So I buy a suit to wear to work, say. So can I claim that?
No, unfortunately. It's a common question. But no, unless it is a uniform, suit's a good example of something that
is snazzy. I don't think it's necessarily a uniform.
Yes. So the tax rules say there that that's something purchased for personal use, notwithstanding that you might exclusively use it to wear to work.
And say my work truck, right? So I'm a tradie with a work truck. So if I go out and buy a new truck, so I can deduct that?
Depending on the cost of the truck. So if the truck costs less than $20,000, you can claim the deduction in full in the year in which that purchase is made. So the government have a $20,000 instant asset write-off, which means that instead of deducting that expenditure over a number of years, you can claim it in the year in which you purchase that asset. So if it's under $20,000, yes, you could claim that in the year that you bought it. Otherwise, if it's more than $20,000, you'd need to deduct it over a number of years.
And so that's the same for like computers or whatever. But again, we'll just check in here that it's only as to the business use of
that's
that
correct.
Steel.
So, yeah. And that's for each asset. So if you were in the businesses where you had six computers and you purchased six, you can claim each one immediately, providing they're under $20,000.
When people come to our office, there's a few things that they will complain about. One of them is BAS.
Yep.
Have you been doing anything in this space to help people with BAS?
Yep. So this year we introduced a simpler BAS.
And we should say a business activity statement here as well.
Exactly.
Rather than just rely on the acronym.
Yep. So we did some analysis and found that disproportionately businesses were only completing three labels on the BAS, and there was seven. And so what we did is we actually said, well, let's remove the four labels that are not being used. So that makes things a little bit easier.
Is there anything more you're doing in that space? Are you thinking about the future of BAS?
Yeah.
Exciting thing to think about?
Absolutely. So we've got a program of work around what we're calling 2024 at the moment. And so it's what would the client experience look like in 2024? And, you know, we see lots of opportunities with digital. Can we actually set it up or have a future world where the data can be transmitted straight from your computer system, your software package, straight to the ATO, and then we can effectively pre-fill the BAS for you, and you can just make the payment based on that data. So remove the form filling component of that.
And that would, in that world, the future world that you're looking at, businesses would still have the opportunity in this world to correct anything before it became BAS.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, the other thing that people are currently complaining a lot about as it comes in is single-touch payroll. So what's been happening in this space? So I know it's come in for the larger businesses, so for more than 19 employees.
20 or more, yes.
Yeah, 20 or more.
Yeah.
So more than 19, right? So how has that gone for those taxpayers?
The transition has gone really, really well considering the size of this program. Now, you've touched upon the government have announced, and there's legislation before Parliament, which would say that from 1 July 2019, that STP, single-touch payroll, will apply to all employers.
This is the one people are talking to us about.
Particularly those who I've referred to before that are using the shoebox, because all of a sudden they're going to be required to report to the ATO electronically. So we're anticipating that the legislation will go through Parliament, and we have set up a working group to try and flesh out what the challenges are and what we can do to ease that compliance burden for small businesses. So the working group are exploring all manner of options. And one option, for example, is will the software providers offer a low-cost option to micro-employers?
And this is worrying those small businesses.
And that's why we've got that working group together to try and understand What are the facts and what are the myths around where the challenges will present, but also work with the digital service providers and looking at other options to say, well, how can we minimise the impost and obviously try and work to that outcome.
And will always be our office, the Office of the Australian Small Business Family Enterprise Ombudsman, is going to be very interested in this outcome.
Absolutely.
And be part of that as well.
So. And as are we, and again, coming back to my title, so part of the role is to be that voice of small business, and if there are issues that are sort of making it unnecessarily complex to meet their tax and super obligations, then part of my role is to be that voice within the ATO.
I'm glad you're there, Matt. I will be in touch. We've spoken a little bit about deductions already. Another thing that will interest small businesses is tax concessions for small business. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So there's a number of concessions that are available, and there's some technicalities around each of those. And so it is really important that people take time to understand what those concessions do offer and make sure that they seek advice to make sure if they're entitled to a concession that they access that concession. There's a number of them, and one of them is if you have a small business that you can get a discount on the capital gain, the amount that is assessable if you've sold your business. There's a couple of different concessions there. One is dependent on how long you've owned the business, and one is about if it is an active business that you've sold.
And I am aware that there are some quite considerable technicalities around some of these rules. They're very beneficial when they apply.
Yep.
But again, so you may put words into your mouth, but I would suggest that it might be worth talking to your accountant. But knowing what these things are, yeah. And that when you do dispose of assets, that there are some concessions there that mean you are not liable for capital gains tax.
So one of them is a 50% discount if you sell an asset. So, you know, that can have great impact on how much tax you ultimately have to pay if only half of that gain is assessable. The ATO has a lot of advice on its website, and we've got a website dedicated to small business, ato.gov.au/SB support. Get that
just
plug
rolls
in.
Rolls off the tongue.
It does. And, you know, there's a lot of material there to help people, but you know, if you are struggling once you've read that material, I would encourage people to seek professional advice.
Yeah. And certainly a message that when I talk with small businesses is that your accountant as your trusted advisor is one person, that it shouldn't be just when you have a problem, but it's somebody that's really good to stay in touch with on a regular basis.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think where we see great opportunity is to work with advisors, those trusted advisors, and do what we can to help them understand the nuances around these complex rules.
So what happens, just say, we've spoken about all the good things, everything running happily. What happens when something goes wrong? So you get an audit, you have a problem, where do people go?
So I think the first and foremost would be to engage either directly with the ATO or with an advisor or your trusted advisor, someone to help you to understand the issue and what's causing the ATO to think that there is some inconsistency or error in your tax return. I think that would be the first point, is to really engage. We often, I think you and I have actually had a couple of discussions about people that have found themselves in trouble because, you know, after 5 years of trying to hope it'll go away, it doesn't, and the tax liability grows. So I think the first point would be to talk to us. And if you don't understand where the ATO is coming from, I think it's really important to have that conversation, ask those questions of the ATO. I think a lot of people sort of think it's, I've got to answer the ATO's questions, the ATO are sort of looking to prove their case. But I think actually, if you can talk with us, it might help bridge that information gap.
It's good to hear the ATO is open to conversation.
Definitely. And look, obviously, audits can go through their process, and then we've just recently, the Commission has announced that for small business we've got an independent review service through the pilot in Victoria and South Australia. Small businesses will be afforded an opportunity to access an independent review, and that's where someone from another part of the ATO with technical skills will sit in and listen to the ATO position, listen to the views of the taxpayer, and then make an assessment as to who has the better view. The ATO officer is then obliged to follow that decision. So I think that's a really important function to try and avoid matters going to court or to go to objection.
So the pilot's happening in Victoria and South Australia.
Yes.
Is that for any small business?
It is for any small business. There's some cases where we've said, look, they're not in the scope of the pilot, and two obvious examples are where we think fraud and evasion exist, or where Part 4A general anti-avoidance rules might apply. The primary reason for those exclusions is there are other panels that look at those cases, so we don't want to sort of have a review of a review. We just want to streamline those processes.
And how long is the pilot running for?
At this stage, it was announced to run for 12 months, but we will be reviewing it regularly and at least, you know, checking in quarterly in at 6 months and assessing that.
And so it does sound a very positive pilot, and I think we would look forward to it being trialled more broadly.
Yep.
Because it would, I would hope, deal with some of the issues that we get to see as well, which gets me on to who else is in this space. So you've mentioned the ATO is there to listen, have a conversation with you. They've got the pilot that hopefully will be perfected and expanded. Is there anyone else there to help?
Absolutely. So your office, Craig, and also the Inspector General is also another vehicle for if people are having issues and want to have a sounding board and get some assistance. And I think both of those offices and bodies are really important to help with the system and the way the system's administered. And indeed, our material promoting the independent review does say that if you still require further assistance or help, it makes reference to ASBEFIO and to the Inspector General as being other bodies that can help with disputes or issues.
Yeah, we're certainly always there to help around this, but we'll also, our office will also refer things to the Inspector General. And one of the real benefits I see in the Inspector General is that the Inspector General can actually get into your system and actually see your actual records and the decision-making process.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, hopefully it'd be great if we could have that early engagement and help taxpayers to get it right in the first instance.
When people are under the stress of an audit or other tax problems or other just business problems, our office really emphasises the importance for small business to take care of their mental health. Is the ATO looking at this as well?
Absolutely. So all of our staff have gone through some training to try and be aware of cues for where people might be stressed and mental health training. And it's a really important issue and topic at a societal level, not just when you're dealing with the tax office. And so we've got a lot of support available for ATO officers to be aware of this and also to refer other taxpayers to help if we think that that's appropriate.
So, Matt, with mental health, where can people look on your website or ring? Or like how do people learn more?
So, thanks, Craig. The ATO's got a lot of material about if you are experiencing mental health issues. We've got material on our website as to where you can go to seek professional advice and guidance. Otherwise, there's just organisations such as Beyond Blue. So I'd suggest people look at a website or call someone like Beyond Blue.
So coming back to some of the other things small business needs to keep in mind, one is dates.
Yep.
So what are some of the dates that are the relevant ones for small business?
So there's lots of dates, Craig. And so if you're an employer, then 14th of July is a critical date because that's the date by which you've got to have your payment summaries issued to employees. If you're a self-preparer of your tax return, then 31st of October is the due date to lodge your tax return. If you're wanting to use an agent, by 31st of October, you've got to have spoken to that agent so that they can register you on their lodgement program, which gives you further time to lodge your return.
If you already have an accountant, though, you'll be on that program.
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. So the takeaway here would be 14th of July and 31st of October is the two most pressing dates.
Yeah. Yes. And certainly the agent is a good, as we've said before, a good person to help you with all your tax affairs and more as well.
Absolutely. I think that's one thing, Craig, is just using your trusted advisor to help you with the business, because often it can be the preparation. Tax time, it might be too late. So if we can have conversations, we've got a cash flow coaching kit, for example, and that's helping people to manage their cash flow throughout the year. So that's a great thing to be talking to your trusted advisor about how you get things right for the year ahead, not just looking back for the year gone.
You mentioned cash flow, which is one of the really critical things for a small business. Yep. Has the ATO done anything in this space?
So I've touched upon the cash flow coaching kit. So we have recognised that often people just have had challenges managing their cash flow throughout the year, and so you might get a number of bills come in at the same time, and there's what we're referring to as bill shock, where you sort of get all these bills plus your tax bill and you kind of go, oh, got a cash flow issue here I can't get through. So if people can sort of start to look to the year ahead when they can expect bills to be coming in and then sort of actually put the money away. So GST is a great example where, every time there's a transaction, you're collecting a bit of the GST. If you can have the discipline to keep that in a separate bank account, for example, then it can help you when those bills do come in.
Or at least be taking it into account, knowing when it's
Absolutely.
Going to be due.
Yep.
So what other things do you come across that are important for small businesses?
Look, there's a lot of things, but I think one message that I wanted to just get across today was we've got a strong focus on helping small business to get it right. So we've got a big focus on education, prevention and support. And so we do a lot in that space to help people get it right. And day three in the job, I was at a workshop with the small business minister and yourself. And just hearing small businesses say, we need help with this. And if someone could just provide some advice and guidance about this. And I sort of came back to the office and thought, we need to do more in this providing material and getting it out there. And then people pointed out the vast amount of information and support that is on the websites from a number of government agencies. So I think for us, it is how do we take that material and use it in a way? How do we get it to people at the right time? And so some of the things that we've done in that space is we've got a small business newsroom, and we've got just over 2.2 million subscribers at the moment. And we try to remind people it's tax time, it's coming up to 30 June, you might want to do this, or it's coming up to the end of the FBT, you might want to do this. So we're trying to personalise some of the material that we do have out there so that we're not bombarding people with information. And indeed, if you are doing a tax return, for example, we've got web chat to help people through the lodgement of a tax return.
So you can ask web chat any question.
Any tax question.
Any tax question. Yes,
the fastest land speed animal they may also be able to cover, but
Google might be quicker than on that one, but yes. Yeah, so we're doing a lot in that support and educate space, and indeed we've done roadshows with the Small Business Minister, and we do a number of other engagement activities to try and help raise that awareness of what support is there.
And another issue that small businesses are keenly interested in is tax rates. So what's happening in the tax rate world at the moment? So there's been some changes.
So look, there has been a number of changes, and I think there's changes for individuals, which can affect sole traders and employees. And for businesses, there's a company tax rate debate going on at present.
And of course, not all businesses operate through companies, but for those businesses that are operating through companies.
Absolutely. So very important caveat there.
Where's all that sitting currently?
So there's a proposal to change the company tax rate from 30% down to 27.5% for certain entities. And I'll use certain entities at the moment because the debate moves very quickly here. So, but for those entities that potentially impacted by this change, we're advising that people apply the law as it stands today. And if the law changes, then we'll re-engage with either us or your agent to sort of see what changes need to be made to your tax return.
And so, Matt, I'd like to thank you for today, but I will give you one last word. I'll let you have the last word here. What are your three key takeaways that you want to leave with people?
Look, thank you, Craig. I'd like to thank you for coming and having a chat with me. Three tips and takeaways for me is record keeping. Record keeping is really important. And like I said at the start, people have got to figure out what works for them and stick to that, because I think it can just help vastly with getting your tax at tax time. It can help that, but also it can help for the year ahead. So that would be the first one. Second, if you are having problems, whatever that problem be it an audit or just meeting your tax obligations, speak to the ATO in the first instance. Have that conversation. Let's engage in the dialogue. We'll work with you. If you're uncomfortable or uncertain about talking to the ATO, then go to your trusted advisor. Have that conversation with them, or you can go to ASBEFIO or the Inspector General. So that would be number two. And I think number three would be around when doing your tax return, just don't forget. Make sure you include all your income in your tax return and claim only those deductions that you're properly entitled to, and have regard to those three golden rules that I talked about at the start. And with
that's
that, I just say, well, 3A and 3B, we'll call them. So Craig, just thank you again for coming in, having this conversation.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Connect with us on social media and tell us what you think. Download the transcript at ato.gov.au/podcasts.